Accession number 19092, Reel 3.
Lloyd Beddington, Reel 3. Did you see anything of the way the Japanese were behaving as conquerors of Singapore?
Pardon me, yes. They really crowed over us, if you know what I mean. They really made a... They evenly paraded us, in a sense, one day when one of the Hawaii Japanese officers come. They really crowed over it, and they really thought they were it, sort of thing, which didn't want us, but that's it.
Did the people of Singapore seem to like the Japanese or dislike them?
Well, I don't know. We never got real contact. I didn't make real contact with the civilians a lot, to be quite honest. I'm not too sure. I suppose there were some that did and some that didn't. Of course, there was always the element that was helping them in the first place, wasn't there? I mean, there was certain elements who I think wanted the Japanese to be there and get rid of the British imperialism, as they called it. But otherwise, I didn't really honestly make any contact to know anything about it.
Apart from the execution of those four people who tried to escape, did the Japanese have to punish any other British or any Singaporeans?
I don't know. These are what's in there in my mind, you know, now. I can't remember not to... Now, I couldn't go back to that without thinking again, you know what I mean, reading.
What were living conditions like in Changi?
Living conditions wasn't too bad. The diet, of course, basically was rice, but we were able to supplement it with coconut and one thing and another there for quite some time. But after that, then very little, of course, but we got a Red Cross allowance there at one time. It just helped us out a bit as well. But not a parcel. It was just a bit of bulk that went all to the cookhouse and that sort of business. Because I wasn't there long before in Singapore. That was February, but by the time we had cleaned up the docks and the shrine was built and various other things were done, we were soon on our way up country to Thailand.
Could you tell me about that, please?
Well, they decided they were going to... Well, they told us we were going to into Thailand and we were going to do a job for them. Well, it was Southeast Asia Cove Prosperity Sphere, I think they called it. And we were building a railway for them. And, you can take anything you want. You'll be all right up there. And they took us up in... cattle trucks, virtually steel cattle trucks, and they'd got bags of rice on the bottom, and 33 men in a truck, and they took us from there to Thailand. That was about a 3-day job, I think.
How did you fare in the cattle trucks?
No, boiling during the day and cold as the devil during the night. You know, the steel was cold at the night, sides of the doings. And of course, everything you want to do, you had our bucket in there, so you know what I'm talking about. So, but it was the sanitary arrangements weren't very good. Or you did it outside the door, the main doors. The two doors were nearly always open, and done it out of there. But that was a terrible journey, really. Although I suppose we weren't too ill at that time, that moment. We wasn't too ill and dying like, you know, what was to come later. But no, it was reasonably doing. It was bad, but we could bear it, and we did, and got there.
Where did you eventually arrive?
We arrived at Banpong, and then that was on one side of the river, and then we crossed over to the other side, to a place called Chung Kai. That's where we started all our railway work from.
You started working at Chung Kai?
Mm-hmm.
What and work were you doing there?
We were all, 90% of us, were building. We were all building the railway. We was on the railway.
What type of work did you have to do specifically?
Well, what we did, well, everybody else was in it, except for those that was transport carriers, was we'd have we'd have a bag with two bamboo poles through it, and that two bamboo poles through it, and you'd load it up like a stretcher, load it up with earth and make the embankment for the to lay the track on.
So you're moving earth?
Yeah, earth all the time. They started us off with so many metres a day, and of course the boys just get this done and go home, but that crept up and up and up and up till you know, what did I do? And of course we did that, and it was all right for a start because it was flat. You only had one rock face to go through at Chunkoi. You could get that was only a short rock that was in the way, and you got through that, blast your way through that, and that was all right. You know, cut down and then blast your way through that. You was all right. Then you got all the way to Wampo, which was virtually flat, if you know what I mean. So you hadn't only got to make a so high a platform of earth, and then they laid the track, you know, or whatever they got, and laid the tracks on top of it. But when we got to Wampo, that's when we hit trouble, because the mountain came down to the river. Now, we used that two men would sit with one with a cold chisel and one with a big hammer. One would hold a chisel and then used to hammer a hole into the rock face as far as you could get it, and then they'd blow it, then they'd blast it off. And then you'd go down again, and you kept blasting from the top down till you got your track at the bottom. But it was a bit of a job, I'm telling you. The heat was terrific. It was well over the hundreds. I don't know what it was one day, because people were passing out all over the place. Because it's just sort of working on with the sun in that area, like. But it was hard work.
So you had shovels to do?
No, for the start, you see, you should have these hammer and big chisel, big stone chisel, like that. Knock that in till the nades drop blasting powder in and blow it off. 90% of blast off. You'd only got to clean, and then you was banging again. You know, bang another hole. And that's it. Of course, there's dozens of us, you know what I mean, right way along the hole. Because it was a terrific, if you look at it now, it's a real achievement, really. I've been over it since, but it's a real achievement. But, sorry.
Karen.
We were lucky there, in a sense. This is where the pledging business, I told you, I said earlier on the pledging. Len and I, we picked the signals. He said, one of our officers said, Bennett, and he said, will you go a blower and we want you both signals? He said, you know what it is, will you join the communications party? And of course, we was on this face. We said, anything to get out of this. And so we took it. Well, actually, it was a good move. It was a better move than some had got to do the railway. All we had to do then was to lay laying the telegraph line, if you know what I mean, along the railway. We used to go in the jungle, cut the tree, a straight tree, you know, straight pole, and put a cross member on it, lay the two wires across it, but we was in tented camps then. We didn't have to have the old bamboo huts. We were in tented camps. And it was, that was a boom, that was really to us. I think it helped us, Len and I, a lot, because we didn't suffer quite as much as they did on the railway.
Why not?
Well, because we was with, I suppose, you weren't with the main engineers laying the railway. You were with Japanese telephone, I suppose, like the air engineers. And they didn't seem to be, we were getting on, as long as we got the job done, nobody was bothered. But you see, the railway didn't go quite as easy as that. And so the less that didn't go, then there was all this force and, you know, trying to get everybody to do and push and knock about. But we got away with it pretty well, really, I thought, didn't we? I didn't grumble one bit about that.
So which was best, to live in a tent or live in a...
No, we was a small party. We weren't living with hundreds. It was just a small party, so many of us, and we could move a tent. When we actually done from Wombo nearly up to the Burma border in two hops. I did. I had to go back in the middle, but in two hops, we virtually walked the whole railway up there like that. But because we were working up, we weren't forced to walk like someone walked 100 kilometres or something and then pitched down. We just done our work, say a mile or two or so many miles, and then we'd go, or meters, and then we'd go and and carry on and take everything and move up to the next section, sort of thing. So it was not bad, that one.
Why were you selected to do the telegraph work?
I think because we were signallers. You see, we'd had done line work and that sort of thing. Well, that's what it wasn't our signallers officer that actually sent us. It was another officer. So he said, well, you're signallers. He said, you should know something about this. Go and see what you can do, sort of thing. So we went. Luckily, we accepted it and went. So that kept us together then for another several months. This is 43 now.
Did anybody try to sabotage the work?
Oh, there was trees put in the bottom of the railway. There was everything put in. Ants were put in and everything, into the woodwork and everything. This was done no end of times in the course of the time that we were building this year. But I never, as I say, I never got to onto the railway in this period. I only worked on the railway laying it, the railway itself, and I'm talking about the ballast and the rocks and the bridges. And well, I never got onto them at all, really, not from Wampo when I left. This is Wampo. And we went then, I was trying to think of some times, but it was through 43 at any rate. This is all happening through from sort of October 42 to, was it November 43? You know, about a year, about one full year actually up there, in a sense. But while I was on this, I was considerably getting bouts of malaria. I had no end of them. And in the end, I then with a bit of beriberi, you know, and one thing and another, we were getting low. I got sent back to Tamarkan. Or just the bridge over the Royal Quay, they call it now, but that's where the camp was. And that was a sick camp at that time. This is fairly late in 43. It'll be August on, I suppose, September, July, August, end of July, August on. And I went back for a few weeks there sick. But they put me on a burial party, you can call it. There was a sick camp there, and of course people were dying every day. And we used to, apparently, of us, there were so many of us, and we used to go out in the morning and dig so many graves. And then in the afternoon, those that died, we'd wrap them up in rice sacks and bury them. But at least they got a decent burial, because we always had a boogler there for the last post. But I'd hate to remember how many I buried over in that period. There was only a few weeks, but by the time I was there, but it was... It was every day, there was 8, 9, 10, you know, that sort of thing, 7, 6, 5, you know, all that time.
What were they dying of?
Well, malnutrition, beriberi, pellagra, beriberi, you name it. All sorts of, you know, nearly everything you can find. Especially malaria. Luckily, the malaria I caught was not cerebral, but a lot of people caught cerebral malaria, which was like signing your death warrant, you're not many. But beriberi used to swell you up. People would have legs all twice as big. And here, your privates, you'd swell up, so they're like a football sort of thing. With water. Of course, a lack of vitamin. The whole thing was a lack of vitamin B. But it was a rum time. Of course, I had to bury a local lad here. I won't mention no name in case of, you know, somebody in the family might hear now even. But I had to bury one of the local lads I knew at that time. On that far down the road here, and that weren't very pleasant. Men you'd already known for years, but there, it happened. But then after they had a patient full of that, they sent me back to. I missed the cholera epidemic. There was a cholera epidemic at a place called Takanun, and I just got back at the end of it, but that's. It's a terrible thing. You must never want to do it. People just die overnight. There's two boys in this town now. Well, were in this town. Two brothers. And they're on that list. One caught cholera tonight, or today. His brother took him in at 6, they had another camp over the side, so you weren't mixed, you had a camp on the other side of the camp that we was in. And by 6 o'clock the next morning, both were dead. There's two gun hunters. Two boys, two brothers from the town. And while you're on that, I know one lady in this town, or did then, she's dead now, of course. She lost two sons and a brother out there. I buried one of the sons, because he was a friend of ours. We buried him at sea, later on I'll tell you. But that's how it was.
Did you ever get punished by the Japanese?
Not punished in a sense. I never got caught for anything like where you got a real beating. Several times, the favourite trick was this. Double a fist, don't punch you, but hit you in the face with the back, with your back, with the front of the fist, if you know what I mean, like that, back end, that sort of thing. Give you a clunk into the jaw and the head and that sort of thing. You'd get a dig. We all had like digs with rifle butts and bamboo canes and one thing or another when they were on a stoke up. Everybody got it in the time. But some did get beaten badly when, you know, they done things, you know, sort of thing. They didn't do what the Japanese wanted to do and they were sorted out. There was a lot of atrocities, there's no doubt about that.
What did you get smacked in the first fall?
All sorts of things. Mostly, if you was in a party and after you'd finished work, which was, as the weeks went on, it was less and less, but you'd be sitting down, and if a Japanese passed you, you had to jump up and bow. Of course, we none of us hardly got hats by then. If you got a hat, you had to salute, but if you didn't, you had to bow. And of course, if you didn't jump up, that was it. They used to line you up and give you a dig here and there. But now there's a funny thing happened here. We sat with a party one night, we was playing bridge. As a matter of fact, I learned to play bridge there. And he came and nobody took no notice. And we jumped up, the four of us. And he said, you, and he said, English. And bang, one side. He went down a line. I think the next man was American. Oh, American. Now he got two, one the other side. He gets another Englishman, one. He gets right on the end, and he says to the end man, you? He said, I'm a Scotsman. He said, Scotsman, all right, and walked away. So you see the ignorance when you think of it. That's absolutely true, that was. We set the airplane, and that's what happened. But we all got a bash at the side of the face. But it was a favourite trick, that was. But you try to keep on your feet if you could, because if you went down, you got to dig with it. Rifle butt or a cane, if they got a good bamboo cane, you get belt with that while you stood up. While we're on this, my mate Jack Kriegers, I tell you, we got caught again like this, and he gave us a bash and nobody said anything. He didn't know, just give us all a thump as he went through, and he got down, and of course my mate, he was a big busted, he didn't fight anything at the time, and he called him a yellow bastard and thought he got away with it. But the officer on at the time heard him, called him over and told the chap, and of course they gave him a pretty good pasting. He said, you yellow bastard, on the end. And the officer called out and said that he's in Japanese doing so. He must have told him what he said. And of course he gave him a real clear note right there.
Were there any executions there?
There was one in Chiang Kai in the early days. Four tried to escape again, and they were shot for the same thing, dig your grave, put you beside, tie you up, shoot you, drop in your grave and fill them in. But that was done, that was a warning. But there was a price on our heads, you see. The ties, some of these people had never seen money, but they put such a money on our heads that if we were out of the area where we should be, they were after them, you know, they would tell them. I mean, that was it. It was a terrible effort, really.
So what was your attitude towards the Japanese at this time?
Well, if you want to know what I think of the Japanese, and still do, that my age, I've got no animosity towards the younger generation, but the Japanese, now I've got no time for them even today. I was 40 years before I'd even eat rice. I wouldn't see rice in the air. I was 40 years married, and I wouldn't have rice in the house. So you know how my attitude was to the Japanese. I absolutely hated them, and that's the truth.
Did any individual Japanese treat you with consideration?
Later on, if you go and A bit further. I can tell you one that helped me later on, but not in this period of time.
So what were you wearing by now?
Well, we was down at Jabba Happy's, as we called them. They were G-string. In fact, I was in tattered trousers one day, and a Chinese lady gave me a length of black cloth and told me to, you know, because I was in such a state, you know what I mean? Everything was showing, I'll be honest.
A Japanese lady?
No, a Japanese lady. Chinese lady, I beg your pardon. Did I say Japanese? I beg your pardon. Chinese. And she gave me this, and we got a bit of string on it, and of course you tie it around your waist and up and over, and then you was all right, sort of thing. But no, the Japanese didn't give you anything. All the things you had to do with those pinch theirs.
So you just wore your uniform until it dropped a bit?
That's right. You worn your shirt and trousers till they dropped off you, and your shirts until they dropped off you. Most of the time we were less than I am, you know, just to sum it on. And here we stuck this. I can never understand how we didn't, in that year, I can't understand how we managed the heat and that. And then the mud, when it got to the monsoon season, which it was, of course, there was a mud season through it, and that's when men died. They couldn't do the walking and that sort of thing. It was all.
So can you take the story a bit further, because you were on the burial party at Tamarkan?
Yeah. Then we went back up again to country to... Oh, sorry, I did do. We went back up to under the Kora. We went up to Kora, back to Takanun, and that's where the Kora... They had a bad bet of Kora there, as I told you, with these brothers. And Len and I were there for a short time, and then... The call come to go back to the, strangely enough, the call come go back to the communications party. Don't know how it worked out from there. I never did find out what happened there. And we went, caught them up again up the road and walked up to the next camp or two, and they wanted some men, and we went in and picked up where we left off. We'd both been down sick. But we got back in again to the communications party till the end of time, till the end of the railroad was built.
Were you glad to go back to the communication?
I was, certainly. Yes, certainly was. Although, while we was at... this might encroach on when you're going to do, but I must say this. While we were in Takanun, Eric Bouch, he was in the Japanese cookout. You'll hear more later. And he come up one day, and he'd got no end of bits and pieces for us. You know, he broke out of his camp and come up to ours and brought us this stuff. And we were, all of us, what was there, was Jack, Len and I were then together. Of course, we'd lost two of us, lost two members by then, but died out there. Two of the six that we pledged to help, two of them had died. And Eric brought this stuff in, you know, food and bits and pieces, and he had it in a bag and brought it out of the Japanese camp, brought it up to us. Because the Japanese wouldn't touch, if they had a pig. There were pigs, they were rum shape, if you know what I mean. But they used to have meat, but they would not touch anything inside. But we would have the liver and the heart and anything was going, you know what I mean? Even the blood if it was going. And Eric brought bits and pieces like that up to us and helped us with different things. He was very good that time, he helped us out a lot.
So the Japanese would only eat the muscle.
But that's his story, you'll hear more about that.
So the Japanese would only eat the actual
food? They'd only eat the real ones, but Eric will tell you more about that. Then, of course, it went to, really, till the end of the railway, it sort of the end of getting towards the end of 1943, and they joined it up then, and they give us a day off. Strange thing. They said, it's the end of the railway, we're going to have a ceremony at the end, because they were coming in, the other crowd were coming in from Burma. There was one lot working from Burma, one lot working from Thailand, and we met in the Three Pagoda Pass, near the Three Pagoda Pass. And anyway, we set out to see if we could see this ceremony. We thought it was only just up the road, but it must have been miles, because we had the idea it was only just up the road. But we were three of us walked that way, but we didn't, just on the long one. But no, it didn't happen. But anyway, coming back, we come across a bullock, as you would call it. It was a scary, it was a rough-looking thing from the Japanese. It got out of the Japanese enclosure. So we winded this bullock back, not going near it, but just kept pushing it forward, if you know what I mean, till we got back to our camp. And when we got back to the camp, we one of us went ahead, one of the three of us went ahead and said to the cook, "Are you ready for a bullock?" He said, "Right." He said, "Can you get rid of one? Quick, what there is of it." He said, "We can have everything," he said. And we drove this in, and they killed it, skinned it, drained it with blood, and we drunk the blood, and they cooked everything, you know, cut everything, and we buried everything else, and it was all done before anybody knew it was ever missing.
So the Japanese can't have been supervising you very closely.
No, they weren't then. No, that, we were out then, because it was a sort of a free day. Everybody was quite happy. The row was through, and oh yes, this is it. We can get through, and that sort of thing. But there, it was one of those things that happened. We had a laugh on it, really, to be truthful, in the end, although it was nasty. But great friendships were built up.
Did you get any Allied air raids?
Not at that time. I never got one at all, because now I was... we had a medical, and this is where I meet up with Eric. I leave Len and meet up with Eric again, and we were off to... We went back to Chiang Kai, and then we were on a 25 and 26 party to Japan, to go to Japan, to work in Japan.
Can you tell me about travelling to Japan?
Yeah, I can. I'll tell you a little about it. We, first of all, we were given gear, but when we got back to Chiang Kai, Jack was in a terrible state. And we'd been given little bits of more of clothing to go down to Singapore with, and that to make us a bit more respectable and that sort of thing. And but Jack, when we got to Chiang Kai, he was in a terrible state. He couldn't walk, he couldn't get off his bed, off the bamboo. Eric and I used to carry him down to the river and wash him and bring him back. And when we left, after we'd been there a while and we had to go back to Singapore, we left him as much of our clothing as we dare leave in case we should be caught for not, you know, getting rid of it. But we give him bits and pieces to help him through. And not one of us thought we'd ever see him again, to be honest. Not either Eric or I thought so anymore. But anyway, then we left him. We used to look after him while we was there. And then Eric and I then, there's two of us then, I lost Len and went to Eric. And we made our way back to Singapore the way we came, in trucks, in 35 to a truck and back there. And we was at Havelock Road camp for a while. And then we were embarked on the Osaka Maru. And you were put in hold of the ship. There was rubber halfway up, or latex, you know, the raw rubber. And then round the other holes, men were put. But we was last, so they left us a gang. I was on top. We were all on, we left us out on top of this other ship. We never did get trapped down. I didn't want to be down, trapped in a hold if I could help it. But we didn't. And we kept on top. And we made our way, we started off in about the April or May, end of April, beginning of May. And we made our way across to Borneo, up the Philippines to Manila. And then we were in Manila a fortnight. And then they decided it was okay again, so off we set again, the convoy. And we went up, we was always hugging the coast till we got to Manila. Then, of course, as you know, we'd got to get, you'd got the South China Sea, you'd got to go through it somewhere. And we buried Ray Hyam. That was the first one of our close friend went. He went over.